games on the schedule?
No!
That doesn't stop us from talking football. This is the Pick and Save Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show, presented by Raising the Stakes Fundraising and Leadership Development. Here are your hosts, past WFCA President Tom Swiddle and WSSP High School Insider Big Time Mike McGiver. No!
Welcome to the WFCA show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern, sitting in for Tom Swiddle this week. He is Doug Sarver, head football coach at St. Francis. He's the president-elect of the WFCA. That's big, huh?
Gonna be.
It's gonna be. A lot of changes coming, or what?
We'll just go with the flow right now.
Yeah, Tony's done a good job.
Tony's done an excellent job.
He's done a good job. The event that I had a chance to be part of a couple weeks ago was unbelievable, Doug. Thank you for that.
Yeah, we got a chance to see you there. I haven't seen you since, and it is a great event.
You know, my mom came. My brother flew in from Florida. My mom, my wife was there, my kids, my grandkids, and some friends of mine, Mike Bush and his wife, and Brian Kleisman and his wife. We had a couple tables of people there. I talked to my mom the next day, and she said, Michael, that was overwhelming for me. I said, really? And she said, I thought it was going to be like a little awards banquet at St. Peter and Paul that when you were in grade school where you got a little trophy. She said, it took me about a half an hour to just kind of like relax a little bit. I didn't realize how many people. And the fact that you were up there sitting next to the head football coach from Wisconsin, I said, yeah, that was a little mind-blowing for me. What a nice man he is.
Yeah, I saw that you were sitting next to his mother, Patty, also. Yeah. And I had that chance the year before, and Patty's just a great woman.
Yeah, Patty, and she is a talker, which is great because Brett's not so much talker. He's kind of quiet, but man, Patty can go. It was great. I love the fact that the stuff that she's doing for the foundation up at Wisconsin, I'm going to have her on this show because she said one of the things that we struggle is we get very little response from some of the schools in Milwaukee. And we give away some good scholarship dollars, and I want people to be involved. And I said, why are people not getting involved? She said, we don't hear back from them. And I said, well, maybe they don't know about it. She said, well, we send the stuff out to the schools. I said, look, a lot of coaches listen to this coach's show. And so why don't we have you on and let's talk about it and promote it a little bit. Maybe they'll start looking for that mailer. So we'll do that. Let me run down today's show if we can. Our first guest, we'll talk to him in a minute. He is Deputy Director of WIAA Wade LaBecchia. He's going to join us. At 10:30, Dario Agumawale. That's going to be tough for me. Dario Agumawale, former UW running back, Marquette High boy. Man, what a great career he had at Wisconsin. And he's getting ready for the NFL draft. And we're going to talk to him about what he's doing on a day-to-day basis to get that dream taken care of. 11 to 11:30, Travis Wilson will join us with sports.net. 11:30 to noon, the founder, owner of Next Level, Brad Arnett, is going to join us. We'll talk about the combine with both Travis and Brad. But right now we're joined by Wade LaBecchia, Deputy Director, the WIAA. Wade, how you doing today?
Pretty good, Mike. How are you?
Good, good. I've seen you a couple times the last few months up in the same hotel up in Middleton. And I was there for the baseball coaches and the football coaches. It's good to see you. Things are going pretty well.
They are. You know, it's been an interesting spring thus far for baseball with the rain and so forth. In fact, it's pouring up here. But yeah, it's been interesting. But I'm doing well. It was nice to see you up there. Nice award for you. And you're right. I used to sit between Patty and Judy.
Oh man,
McLean.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That was a fun night. There was a lot of talking going on. You're exactly right.
Patty's holding court. She was holding court up there. She had four conversations going at once and never missed a beat. It was really impressive. Yeah. Hey, we may have you on a baseball show coming up soon because, you know, I guess every year this time of year, people, baseball coaches that are spring coaches are grumbling. And so we'll have you on in a week or 2 weeks, 3 weeks from now, something like that, come baseball season to answer some of their questions. But let's talk high school football right now, if we can. We want to talk about some of the rule changes that are going to be in effect for the upcoming season. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Sure.
I know on your website, the 2017 points of emphasis, responsibility on players to avoid illegal contact, illegal helmet contact, and there's a couple others that we'll talk about. But I think the state of Wisconsin, I think you guys and the coach have done a great job of really shining a light on the helmet part of it, the head-to-head contact, trying to take the head out of the game.
You know, and they're always doing those points of emphasis. I think they've been doing the same ones for the last 5 to 7 years. I'm on that national committee, and you know, there's three types of rules that we deal with. And the first set is the NFHS sport rules, and those are determined by the National Federation Football Rules Committee. And we'll talk about a few of those. I think there were 12 of them that went in. Those are done at the national level, and we have input. I fly over to Indianapolis for a weekend in January, and those are the rules, the points of emphasis that we'll work on. We have a say, but we don't determine those. It's kind of like, you know, I got a nasty email the other day about the pitch count. That's a National Federation rule. It's not a WIA rule, and they always, you know, people get their rules mixed up. Well, WIA does rules that are season regulations and tournament procedures. Those come through the committee process. The coaches come up in December. We talk about those rules. The one rule change that we're dealing with this year is the August 1st start date. That's a WIA committee rule. It comes through the baseball coaches, or football coaches, through the athletic directors, and then through the administrative council, advisory council, and then the board. And then we have constitution, who can belong to WIA, bylaws, how the schools behave, and then the rules of eligibility on who can play. And those are determined by the membership, the member schools. So, you know, we always tell people that, you know, if you're upset at a rule, don't blame me. Wade just works at the office. He applies them. He doesn't make them. But a lot of rule changes in high school football, and they're kind of interesting. The biggest one, I think, is the blindside hit. And some of our coaches at the clinic were a little worked up about that one. You no longer can do the decleater. So if somebody's running down to try to catch up with a guy who's broken open on a long run or on a punt return, and if they're just chasing somebody, somebody can't circle back and just take them out with a blindside hit. Now you have to hit that person with open hands. And that's going to be a big rule change. I think it's going to be an easy one. Oregon's been doing it for the last 2 years. Utah and Hawaii have been doing it for the last 2 years as an experiment. But I think that's a big move or a big rule that they're going to see that comes in. And you're right, we've been doing risk minimization for quite some time. So a new one that is coming in with the kickoff is that you can't kick the ball directly into the ground and on the first bounce go 15 yards high in the air. And that's going to be an illegal procedure call, and it'll be blown dead right away. You can still do an onside kick with two bounces and have the second bounce go high, but on the initial bounce, because what happens is the ball goes in the air, and then all those kids are looking up at it, and they get taken out. So those are the two big risk minimization rules that are coming in. There's a few other rules that, quite frankly, I don't understand why they're in there, but they're taking the casebook play on defenseless player, and they put in A through H on examples of what are now hits on a defenseless player. It's a nice list. It's always been included in the casebook, but now it's been put in there as a rule. So those are probably the big three, but, you know, like I said, the last one wasn't a huge change.
No, and I looked at those, and I started reading those, and I thought, well, I think those have always been part of this, a player in the act or just after throwing a pass, right? A receiver attempting to catch a pass who has not had time to clearly become a runner.
Right.
I mean, they made those specific now, but, Doug, haven't those been rules that – I think we've thought have been rules if they haven't been?
Yeah, I think they're just clarifying them a little bit more.
Yeah. What's your feeling on the blindside hit?
I think it's long overdue. I mean, they're trying to make the game safer, and this is one of the no-brainers to me. I agree with you, Wade, and I don't know why coaches would get upset with this rule. This is something that needs to be taken out of the game.
Hey, Wade, how do you
then... I think it'll be easy to do.
How do you get the referees then to understand exactly... what you guys want to see in that rule? You just send them what the new rule is, and then it's up to them to make sure that they understand it?
Well, we have, you know, we have a rules video that the coaches and the officials watch every fall before the season begins, or at least we hope they do. Officials, in order to be registered, have to watch it. And with this one here, because Oregon's been doing this for 2 years, we're going to get some video clips. In fact, they do have a video out there right now. If you were to Google OSAA for Oregon State Activities Association, blindside football video, you could pull up a video that's excellent. And Brad has examples of what they want to take out and what's legal and what's not. This rule actually has been, I believe, in the NCAA for 2 years. So it's one of those that I think is going to be easy, but we're going to definitely have to put out some educational materials. No doubt about that.
On the new kickoff rule, as long as the ball bounces twice, it's okay?
Yes. Yeah, because it gives the receiving team an opportunity to get set and to be able to block. You know, and this is one that I actually voted no on because, I mean, it seems like we're always trying to go ahead and make things a little bit clearer and a little bit risk minimization, but at the same time, we're getting awfully nitpicky. You can't hit a receiving member until the ball has gone 10 yards or until they have initiated a block. So,
right.
To me, this rule wasn't necessary. And I'm a rule minimalist. I'm not in favor of more rules, believe it or not.
Yeah, that's...
The more rules you have, the more you have to enforce.
You know, that's not what people say about you behind your back, right? Hey, go ahead, Doug.
Hey, Wade, I was reading that the face guarding rule may have some changes to it on defense.
Yes, you know, that's that old one, Doug, when you were running down there and the receiver's down there and the defender's beat and he's got his back to the ball and he puts both hands up in front of the guy's face. That's out now. So, you know, it's one of those old-fashioned rules that they decided to take out of there. So, I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen it called, quite frankly, but that now you're able to put both hands up as long as you don't touch that person's body. And, you know, those are some of the examples of the rules there that really kind of confused me. You know, are they necessary? I'm not sure. You know, the NFHS ball now, you can't have any advertising on it. Well, nobody had advertising on it before, you know. The uniforms now, they have to be a clearly contrasting uniform color, so you can't have a light gray. So now they're telling you what shade of gray you can have a uniform color. I wish they would have just said numbers are white rather than, you know, going like that. The game officials now, I guess, have some sort of, they can have another guy out there instead of just the umpire and the referee to go ahead and ask if your equipment is legal. So sometimes you sit in there and you shake your head and you go, well, what's some of this stuff about? You know, prosthetic limbs, if they fall off, I believe that now is a dead ball foul, just like a helmet coming off. So if the person's in the play, you know,
man.
So there's some of those rules that you look and you go, okay, what really is the reason for it? So this one here, I was really surprised that there's, you know, 12 rule changes. I believe the game's in a good spot. I believe we've done a great job of risk minimization with the coaches. We've collaborated with the doctors, you know, so at the national level, I wish we would understand that as well. We're in a good spot. Some of these rules aren't really one of those that really are necessary.
Wade, I think I saw something about the clock being able to be stopped or ball snapped after 2 minutes and a half, 2 minutes in a game, a change in the option for the team that the penalty is against.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, Doug. It's a, you know, when you go in there and you have people who are deliberately trying to stop the clock in order to get more plays, and this is inside the last 2 minutes. So, and it's rule 347. It's a new rule, and it says it's added an option to the offended team to start the clock on the snap for an accepted penalty inside the last 2 minutes of either half. So what this is it's added an option for the offended team to accept the penalty, and inside the last 2 minutes of either half, you can go ahead and start the clock right away. So the official still has the opportunity to determine when exactly to start or stop. But if somebody's committing a foul, jumping off sides to stop the clock, and now you had to wait till they're ready for play, you know, you had to wait for the ball to be snapped to start the clock. So they're doing that deliberately to stop the 2 minutes. Now you jump off sides on me, I look, I say, I'll take that penalty, but I want the clock to start I want the clock to start ready for play. So a referee puts the ball down and he starts winds it rather than waiting for the snap.
Who will tell the referee? Who tells the referee that?
It'll be the captain. So okay. If you accept the penalty, he'll look and say, it's inside 2 minutes. When do you want the clock to start? And I would tell you immediately. And then the referee will just, as soon as the umpire puts the ball down, gets out of the way, the referee will wind it and start the clock. So, you know, that's one of those conserving time ones that people used to do all the time. You know, I'm jump off sides and now the clock stopped. You know, I can decline a penalty, but it still didn't start till a snap. So it's going to be an interesting one to see how that one works. The one I was disappointed with, when the one that I put in there, was to allow the quarterback to throw the ball away once he was outside of the pre-blocking zone. I thought that would have been a good one to, you know, if we're worried about quarterback and getting hurt, I think it'd be nice to be able to roll out, get outside that, you know, pocket would be the pre-blocking zone in high school.
They turned that one. That one did not get sent through. That one, they rejected that?
Yeah, they rejected that one. You know, we still got some old-timers that don't want to give that advantage. They want you, if you're going to throw the ball, then you're going to pay the price for throwing the ball.
Wow.
We call them the Southern Block. That's the SEC down there in the southeast end. And they like to, you know, they still believe in running the ball and ramming it up your throat, and they don't want to give us quarterback throwing guys a little bit extra advantage.
Well,
you know, that's really what high school rules are about, is maintaining a balance between the offense and the defense. And keeping the rules as simple as possible.
And keeping these kids safe, and that would be a rule that it surprises me that they rejected it, since lately almost everything we've talked about has been keeping these guys safe. And that there's a rule that could keep the quarterback safe a little bit in that one they rejected. Guys, we've got to get to a break. Wade, can we keep you over one more segment?
Sure.
Great. We're going to continue our conversation. He is the deputy director of the WIAA, Wade Lebecki. Our special in-studio guest, I guess my co-host, actually, right? Doug Sarver sitting in for Tom Swiddle. This is the Pick and Save, Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show, presented by Raising the Stakes Fundraising and Leadership Development on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Welcome back to the Pick and Save, Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show, presented by Raising the Stakes Fundraising Leadership Development on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern, alongside my co-host this week, Doug Sarver, president-elect of the WFCA. He's also the All-Star Game Chairman, head football coach at St. Francis. We're joined right now by the Deputy Director of the WIAA, Wade Lebecki. Hey, Wade, the August 1st start date, has that caused much issues for you?
Not really. You know, now I have coaches who aren't happy because now they have to hand out equipment on the same day as practice. And, you know, and we used to do that. Doug has probably been around as long as I have been around. And when I first started coaching, we used to hand out our equipment on Thursday and then come in the following Monday and practice. Then I got tired of that. So then we came in on Monday. And then we handed out our equipment on Monday and practiced on Monday. So you'd just hand out the helmets, go out there and have a three-hour practice, come in and hand out the rest of the equipment. Then we came into the part where we hand out equipment on Monday and then hand out and practice on Tuesday. And then a few years later, then we handed out equipment on Monday and we were able to fitness test on Monday and hand out and practice on Tuesday. And we did this about 5 years ago when we did the 8-game season. And they really didn't like that when we started on, I think we started on a Wednesday or something. And so now we're back to where we were many years ago. And I think if you try to adapt a little bit, it's real doable. You know, the first day you can only do helmets, and the second day you can only do helmets. So hand out the helmets and then hand out the rest of the equipment after practice is over.
Hey Wade, you know, I here at Entercom, I'll say this a lot. Boy, it's really difficult to keep everybody happy. I can't imagine your job, man. Is there anything that you've ever done that you've gotten 100% support on?
No, but I suppose if I retired, I would.
No, I don't think that at all.
Just to clarify a little bit on the August 1st start date, the 2 years that will be affected are the next two, which where they'll have to hand out equipment on the same day as practice. Once we get the calendar turned, then we can be back to handing out equipment
like the first
the day
week
before, as long as it's August 1st or later.
Hey,
that's an excellent point, Doug, because, you know, most people don't understand the calendar role. And, you know, we had this role 5 years ago when we had the 8-game season and they didn't want to start early, so we had an 8-game season. That was a year where, once again, we were in the first week of August or that July week. And the calendar rolls about every 5 years. So the next roll after 2018 is 2022. So then we'll go back to our regular start date. But that calendar rolls because as Thanksgiving is, you know, the last week or the last Thursday of November, it will now roll back to November 28th in 2 years. Well, then we'll start August 5th. So we'll start that first full week of August. So it's kind of an interesting concept, but we don't have a say. We always start on the fifth week of this of the year, and the year starts July 1st. So when July 1st moves around and Thanksgiving moves around, so does the start of football. And that's it's a calendar rule, and it does that for all sports. So it's one of those interesting little things that's why we have an early start, and we're in July this year, or, you know, August 1st now. It's all because of the way that calendar adjusts and it rolls.
Hey, Wade, this will be the first year of the new conferences coming up, and you know, there was a lot of people upset, and I think the dust has kind of settled at this point. I know there's still some people that aren't real happy about it, but it is what it is, and you have to play now, you know, what's on the schedule. I guess I can't ask you to look into the future, but I guess your opinion, is this something 5 years from now, will these conferences be the same or different in your opinion?
You know, I don't do conference realignment, and quite frankly, as touchy as that one is, I that's almost as bad as to the transfer rule. I let Deb take care of most of that because, you know, it's just a difficult situation. Talking about not pleasing everyone, that's one where somebody's always there's very few who are real happy with it. I think conference realignment happens as you see the enrollment changing in different schools. You know, and in the southwest part of the state, rural enrollment is just declining greatly, and in those schools you're seeing them either move to 8-player or co-op, and they can't play in some of their schools. I know the enrollment in our private members is dropping. So as the demographics change, I think you see people requesting to change from conference to conference. I can see down there that people will be in there for a year or two, and then they'll probably petition to have conference realignment.
Yeah,
I know we have a member down in the Southwest who's asked for the district plan to come back. I'm not sure where that'll be. The board probably will discuss it a little bit. So now we're back into the talking of the district plan. And do we do it in certain parts of the state? And do we, you know, and leave other parts of the state? You know, the Southeast is kind of a nice area because there's a lot of schools down there. So it's easier to put those schools together. In the Northwest and in the Southwest, it's very difficult to move schools around in conferences because there's so few of them in such an area. The travel up there is, you know, it's nothing to go an hour and a half to travel on a Tuesday night for a basketball game in the Northwest. For down in Milwaukee, it's 20 minutes. So I could see changes happening, no doubt about that. But I wouldn't know, you know, if it's going to be parts of the district plan, if it's going to be the district plan. It'll be, you know, once again, it's up to the member school.
Sure.
They can petition on when they want to be, you know, into conference realigned. We have that happening all the time. We've got two conference realignments coming up right now in April. They're not as big as that one down there was, but, you know, it's always some conference realignment is going on probably 2 to 3 times a year.
Hey, Wade, we got to get to a break. Thank you so much for your time. Happy Easter to you and your family. I'm sure I'll see you at the Marriott in Middleton here in the next couple of weeks for something, because that's where I always run into you. We really appreciate your willingness to come on to a show like this and talk about some of the changes and how you feel about, you know, certain aspects of the high school experience that these kids are having. So thank you so much.
Thank you. And, you know, when I was the president of Coaches Association, I understand where football is and it is. And it's just that now I'm on a different role. And it's always been important to be able to do the best you can for football. So thanks a lot and have a great Easter as well.
We appreciate you, Wade.
You bet. Guys, let's get to a break. Dari Agumbawale is going to join his former UW running back, Marquette High Hilltopper. And he's getting ready for the NFL draft. We're going to talk to him a little bit about that journey and how a day-to-day, what's his day like getting ready for the draft and getting a chance to fulfill a dream of his? And we'll do that on the other side. This is the Pick and Save Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show presented by Raising the Stakes Fundraising and Leadership Development on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Welcome back to the Pick and Save, Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show, presented by Raising the Stakes Fundraising Leadership Development on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern alongside my co-host Doug Sarver, president-elect of the WFCA, head football coach at St. Francis. You know, I went to Messmer, right, Doug?
Yes, sir.
Coached at Dominican a long time. We always beat the heck out of those Marquette High boys, man. No, maybe not. Maybe that's just how I remember it. We are joined by a former Hilltopper, a proud Hilltopper. He is Dare Agumbawale. He is former running back at Madison. He walked on as a defensive back, and we are now joined. He's going through some stuff now we want to talk about. He's following his dream. Dare, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. How about you guys?
I was just kidding about the Marquette High thing. You know that, right?
I knew you were.
Hey, so congratulations on what turned out to be a phenomenal career up at Wisconsin. We don't have enough time because we're only going to have you for two segments to read all the things that people have sent to me about you, but I'm going to read a couple of them. Voted team captain at Wisconsin, was president of the UW's Beyond the Game program, invited to both the East-West Shrine Game and the NFL Combine. Pro Scout said he's both a good runner and a great receiving threat as a running back. He gained 94 yards his first game as a running back, walked on as a defensive back. After his first game, he moved over to running back. And to show you what kind of athlete he was, he didn't start playing football till I think his junior year in high school. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Man, so you were a soccer player, huh?
Yeah, I was a big soccer guy growing up. My dad, he loved soccer, so he had us play it also.
You know, as a basketball coach, I loved soccer players that came and played basketball. You guys run all day and you defend like crazy, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, when you first started playing football, was that a sport that you immediately fell in love with?
Yeah, I mean, I had obviously always watched it. I mean, my dad, he was a big football fan, and so I was a big Packer fan. We would watch games all the time. And then when I started playing, I mean, it was fun, and it was a lot different than any sport that I was playing. I mean, I played basketball and soccer and track, and it was a lot different than any sport that I played. So, and like you said, I mean, right away, I just kind of fell in love with the game.
Did, when you first went out, because it's unusual, you know, you talk to kids that are, you know, 6 years old right now and starting the youth football and peewee football and running into the, you know, the same program that their high school is running. And for a young man not to put a helmet and shoulder pads on till his junior year, and they get a chance to walk on at Wisconsin and have the kind of career that you had, it's very unusual. You understand that, yes?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and I did play, like, when I was really, really young. You know, my dad and my mom, they made sure that they exposed us to all sports and let us decide. But it, right away, you know, soccer was more of a big thing to me. And then I was a small kid, so it was kind of tough for me to play football well. So I kind of quit right away, like fourth grade or something like that, and I kind of stuck with soccer. And then, like you said, my junior year, then I decided to really, you know, get serious about football and actually learn the game and things like that. And it did carry me a long way. But, yeah, like you said, it is unusual because nowadays you see kids, and I know I played at Wisconsin with a bunch of kids who say that they started playing football when they were 5 years old. And
right.
Playing their whole life.
Dare, while you were at Marquette and you started playing football your junior year, you played defensive back. Did you play any running back at all there also?
No, I didn't. I returned kicks and punts, but no, I didn't play running back at all. And I think it was kind of like what you were saying before with the whole switching over from soccer thing. I mean, they thought right away, oh, this guy's a good defender, so we'll put him at D-back. But yeah, they didn't really give me a chance to have the ball in my hands too often.
Well, because soccer guys can't catch the ball much, man. And you know what? You're known as a really good receiving threat.
So the first time that you got a chance to play running back was when they switched you over at Wisconsin.
Yes, sir.
Well, that's awesome being able to handle that.
He gained 94 yards his first game as running back. Yes. Hey, Dare, what was it like? I haven't asked ex-players up at Wisconsin this, but what was it like running through that tunnel, maybe the first or second, maybe you start getting used to it after the first couple of times, but that first time that you run through the tunnel at a packed house up at Camp Randall, do you remember that feeling you had?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, people ask all the time, what was your favorite Wisconsin memory? And I've had some pretty good memories, you know, like you said, throughout my career. But nothing beats, and this was my redshirt year. I knew I wasn't playing, but the first time we played Northern Iowa, 2012 season, I ran out the tunnel for the first time, and one of the best feelings of my life. You know, it was unreal. I mean, I've gone to one Badger game, and I've been to Camp Randall a couple times for like some state football games, but running through the tunnel and seeing all the red for the first time and hearing the band, it was an unreal moment. And the first time is definitely the best, but I wouldn't say that it's something that you get used to. Not at all.
Terry, when the second segment that we have you, I want to talk a little bit about your day-to-day right now, getting ready for the draft and getting ready to try to play at that next level. But before we get to a break, how tough was it for you to be a true student athlete up at Wisconsin? I know that Marquette had you prepared to do the academics at that level, but to be able to juggle being a Division I football player and still do really well in school, was it all time management for you, or what was that transition like?
First off, both my parents are educators, you know. So my dad, he's a high school principal. Mom, she's a fifth grade teacher. So don't really have enough time to slack off when it comes to that. But at Wisconsin, I mean, you do get a lot of resources. So the whole time management part of it is kind of, you know, taking care of you, honestly. So it really is just the work ethic. And, I mean, you got to know that you have to take care of it, and you got to want to, you know, be successful academically. And at the same time, I mean, our coaches, they know that we want to play football. I mean, it's D1 football, so you know that you want to play football. But you know that at the same time, you gotta take care of your stuff in the classroom. And like I said, Wisconsin, there's a lot of resources for you, so it's kind of tough to do poorly in class. But, yeah, like I said, I mean, you got to want it.
Hey, before we get to a break, I had Steve Showalter when I was doing my high school basketball show. He was in, and we had Zach on, and I understand you guys are pretty good friends, huh?
Yeah, Zach's a real good friend of mine. We came close throughout college. We were roommates for a year, so yeah, he's a good friend of mine.
Man, I loved watching both you guys play. You know, sit here in Milwaukee, I never miss a Badger basketball game. I don't miss a Badger football game, and this city is really, really proud of you, and they were so happy to call you. You know, he's a Milwaukee kid. He's a Milwaukee kid, and a lot of people are very proud of the young man that you've become, I can tell you that.
Thank you. It means a lot. It means a lot.
Hey, let's get to a break. I want to ask you on the other side of the break, how are you sleeping right now? You know, what your dream is ahead of you, and let's find out what you're doing to try to accomplish that. And we'll ask Dari what a day-to-day is like for him, and we'll do that on the other side of the break. This is the Pick and Save, Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show, presented by Raising the Stakes Fundraising and Leadership Development on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Welcome back to the Pick and Save, Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show, presented by Raising the Stakes Fundraising on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern, joined by Doug Sarver. He is president-elect of the WFCA. We on the air. Or on the phone, excuse me, Dari Agumbawale, former UW running back, Marquette High guy. Before we get into the NFL stuff, Dari, if I'm on the playground and I'm playing pickup basketball and I've got the first pick and you and your sister are standing there, who am I picking?
Are you playing pickup basketball or horse?
Pickup basketball.
I'll pick my sister.
Yeah, what a year she had. Holy cow.
Yeah, the girl, she's a special player, man. I was real excited to follow her, and I'm hoping to continue to see her keep doing good things.
Yeah, I think so as well, and obviously she's doing great in school and taking care of all her business there. Hey, a day-to-day for you right now, working out, getting ready for the NFL draft. Are you finishing your degree, or do you have that?
Yeah, I graduated in December. With economics, so now I'm really more just, this is the kind of the waiting period, but yeah, I'm just kind of staying in shape and doing the private workouts with teams.
Do you have a feeling whether you will be drafted or not? Have you talked to teams about if that's going to happen, where it might happen?
I mean, I definitely think I will. You know, I mean, teams have given me, you know, 5th, 6th round grades. So, I mean, I'm really optimistic about the whole thing. I've been having some private workouts, and I've been contacted by teams fairly regularly. So, I'm feeling confident about it. Obviously, I mean, once draft day comes, things, you know, things get a little crazy. But I definitely think that it's a very strong possibility.
Do these guys ask the same questions over and over again?
I mean, at the start of the whole process, you know, at the Shrine game and then, you know, a little bit at the combine, you really get the whole questionnaire type questions about your background and your history, your college life, and things like that. But now it's more so, you know, teams will come to your school and you'll sit down and watch film and they'll kind of teach you their offense and things like that and stuff like that.
You know, I've got to believe, Doug, and I'm going to ask you this question. If you're looking at Darius as somebody that you might want to draft, you got to believe that he is not anywhere close to his ceiling because he's only played for 5 years, 6 years. So his ceiling is so high. His body, I would think his body is in better shape than other, you know, players that maybe played in 6th, 7th, 8th grade and then all through high school. I would think that there's so much that he can get a lot better in certain areas with this game.
Well, one of the things that I've seen the Badgers is giving him not just the chance to run the ball, but they gave him the chance to catch the ball out of the backfield, which I think the NFL scouts are really high on him about doing that and be able to get yards after catch. I would say that's one of your strengths, Dari, wouldn't you?
Definitely. I mean, the whole, you know, the third down role as a whole is really big for me, whether that's catching the ball out of the backfield, protecting the quarterback, or, you know, being able to run the ball, you know, when there's an extra wide receiver on the field. I had a lot of success with that my past year. And obviously, the special teams is going to be big for me regardless throughout my whole career. But, yeah, I think the third down role is going to be big for me moving forward.
Hey, James White did okay with that, right? I mean, that's kind of how he started and got into the NFL. And he's, from what I understand, driving around in a pretty, pretty nice new car nowadays.
Exactly. I mean, he definitely helped me out, that's for sure. I mean, I laugh about it with him. But seriously, though, it was really – great to see him have the success he had, especially in the Super Bowl. But, you know, throughout his career so far, I mean, being very reliable on third downs and now even having a larger role. So it's been great to see a good friend have the success he's had.
Boy, you know, when you think back about with the running backs that you followed, Dari, it's got to be incredible. And you start with, you know, I guess in our lifetime or my lifetime would be a lot farther back, but if you look at Ron Dana, just come back from there, it's been an incredible run of really good, solid running backs that play with a good offensive line, obviously up at Wisconsin. But it's incredible that you can start thinking about Wisconsin as such a good running back school.
Oh, definitely. I mean, and Coach Settle, the running back coach at Wisconsin now, he makes sure that we understand the tradition of backs. And like you said, I mean, we got Dane, and we got guys, I mean, like Calhoun and AD, and then guys that I play with, being Monty, James, Melvin, Corey. I mean, it's just a bunch of good running backs, and definitely trying to continue that. And I know even at Wisconsin now, we got three guys that are going to have to, you know, compete for some carries because they're all good running backs also. So we definitely take a lot of pride in carrying the ball at Wisconsin.
Hey, what was the most difficult thing for you? If we've got high school football players that are getting, you know, they're going to graduate from high school here in a couple months and then move on to that next level, whether it's Division III, Division II, or Division I, what advice would you give those guys, Dari?
I would say, you know, right off the bat, just understanding football in general. I mean, you got strength coaches that get paid a lot of money. I mean, guys, I know their spring semester after their senior year, they'll be doing a lot of lifting and all that extra stuff, and which is important. But, I mean, that summer you're going to get there and your body's going to change regardless. I think the most important thing is for guys to learn how to watch film and understand football because, I mean, you want to be fast and you want to, you know, be quick out on the field. But the easiest way to play fast is to know what to do before the play even starts. And that's what I had to learn when I switched over to running back. Just being able to read defenses and, you know, pre-snap, understanding the play, and that allowed me to play fast. So I think the biggest thing is understanding the game of football.
And you know, you don't get on the field if you don't understand that part of it. If you don't know which, you know, if a linebacker's blitzing, if you go the wrong way and you don't understand that you need to pick him up in this hole so he doesn't kill your quarterback, you don't get on the field till you start learning to do that, you know, pretty much 100% of the time, correct?
Exactly, exactly. I mean, the coach has got to have trust in you, but more importantly, your teammates got to have trust in you. And if you're in, like my position, being the third down guy, if the quarterback doesn't really trust you to have his back in protection, there's probably not going to be able to get on the field very much.
Hey, how much did you learn about blocking linebackers from the guys that you had to hit in practice? Because, man, you went against some really good linebackers.
Definitely. I mean, and the great thing is, I mean, all the linebackers were different, you know. I mean, there's TJ who will more than likely just kind of bull rush you and use his reach to not allow you to get to his body. But then there's guys like Sitchie and TJ Edwards who, well, I guess not TJ Edwards, he's not much of a wiggle guy. But Sitchie, I mean, he definitely can he can get past you just, you know, using his hands or using his shoulders and things like that. So it was real good for us, I mean, in blocking, to learn how to block different types of backs. And like you said, all great linebackers.
You know, watching that team play, Dari, the one guy I don't think I would have wanted to block is Beagle. He, man, that guy just brought it on every play, had a motor, and he seemed like he had a little nasty to him.
Yeah, Vince is a great player and a great athlete. And like you said, I mean, his mentality is definitely doesn't change play to play. So he's going to get after it on every snap. And, yeah, like you said, he's a tough guy to block. And he's a great pass rusher. So, yeah, he was definitely a big talent for us at Wisconsin, and he'll be missed.
Dari, you know, and we're going to cut you loose, but I hope that you understand you live in the bubble that you live in with your family and the people up at Wisconsin. I talk to high school football coaches on a weekly basis, and anybody that coached against you or had a chance to meet you, they say the same stuff. That what a really nice young man, must come from great parents, good student athlete, cares about his community. Everybody's rooting for you. And I'm telling you, I don't get that a whole lot with the stuff that I do. There's normally a few people that like the kid, a few people that say, nah, I'm not sure about him. But 100% for you, everybody's rooting for you.
Thanks a lot. Like I said, that means a lot. And I've tried to make sure that I leave a good impact on people that I meet, so that means a lot to hear that, for sure.
Well, you've done a great job, young man. I got to tell you, good luck in the future, and certainly, you know, for me personally, I'd love to. The Packers need a running back, man. I'd love to see you in green and gold, but wherever you end up, we'll be rooting for you.
Yes, sir. Wherever I go, I'll be happy. But like you said, I'd love to play for the Packers up there.
Yeah, if you happen to end up with the Bears, that's going to be hard for me, but I'll give it my best shot.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You got it, Dari. Dari, thank you so much. Let's get you a break. Other side of the break, Travis Wilson from WisSports.net will join us for Talking Combine. It's coming up in a couple of weeks, and it's an exciting time for these high school kids from all over the state of Wisconsin. Going to end up at Sussex Hamilton, and we'll talk to him about that. This is the Pick and Save, Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show presented by Raising.